You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew, featuring Dr. Michael Kotutwa Johnson, a Hopi farmer and a faculty member and assistant specialist within the School of Natural Resources and the Environment at the University of Arizona.
Well, hi there. You know, my name is Michael Kotutwa Johnson, and I'm an assistant professor here at the School of Natural Resources and the Environment. I also have an extension track, so I'm out in the community a lot, but I always like to always start off by saying I'm a 250th generation Hopi farmer, and so that kind of rivals my five generation farmers in Iowa by about a few hundred years and stuff like that. But I'm just proud to be here, and thanks for having me talk about some of the work that I'll be doing here at the University of Arizona.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Michael. We appreciate you taking the time to come here and be with us. I've heard a little bit about the work that you do within your own community with farming, with land, with the environment. What are you mostly known for?
Well, mostly known for, you know, trying to revitalize what I call the American Indian food system. And, you know, and that starts from the basics, just seed and water and soil and just plant it and just look at these things as very value oriented. I'm not one to talk about agriculture from an economic standpoint of view, because for us at Hopi and a lot of indigenous cultures, there's more than just that. It's about who we are. It's very, very deep spiritually. We use a lot of these things for our ceremonies, and they're intertwined. And those seeds are just like us. They're the next generation of people who would be brought planet and brought up just like we do. And so it's kind of neat to think about things like that.
You know, I've never heard anybody say that, and that's a great example, talking about seeds as the next generation. That's amazing. So current things that you are working on now, if there's multiple things, is there one specific project that you have going on now?
Yeah, right now I'm looking at soil health. I'm trying to figure out ways that especially the Southern Arizona tribes can actually grow food for their people. You know, but first we have to look at the soils. We know that there's a lot of pesticides and herbicide use that's out there. We know that these farms are close to the community housing and things like that. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if those soils are okay and they're not too contaminated, that we can actually probably convince the tribes to actually grow food for their own people. Because I know, you know, when you go talk to the leadership of these tribes down here, they're very proud of their agricultural history. But when you go visit their reservations, you see a bunch of cotton and alfalfa, and you don't see that much food that could go into the school systems and their distribution centers, into their schools, and just lead the state of Arizona in producing food for your schools and also taking care of your community.
I feel like little by little, the more resources also get put into these types of programs for community and spaces as well, I think that's always a good start.
Well, you know, the resources are very important. You know, here in the state of Arizona, very, very unique. You know, over 56% of the agriculture produces in Arizona are Native American. And of the 12 million acres that's in farmland here in Arizona, Native Americans are responsible for about 80% of that. And so right now we're looking at trying to conduct an agricultural, what is the impact of Indian agriculture in Arizona? And I hope it comes out pretty good, because I would like to get what I would call a little bit more of federal recognized tribal extension program agents on these reservations, so that they can help build school gardens. They can be the technical providers so that we can make sure that those kids have the healthy food to eat, and a number of other reasons, you know. But a lot of my work also focuses on work with the Indigenous Resiliency Center here at the University of Arizona, led by Dr. Carletta Chief, and I'm one of the core faculty members there. But we focus on food, energy, and water, and I specialize basically in Indigenous agriculture from a very traditional perspective. And so that's what I mean. I don't like to, you know, talk about the economics. I know it's very important, but for us, it's really more important right now to feed our people, to actually do true food sovereignty like we used to do. We kind of got away from that. You know, we used to be the world's best farmers, and I think we still are. You know, we have the resources down here in Arizona. The tribes lead the way in water conservation. So we sit on 60% of the California Aqueduct product as far as water rights. And so we should take full advantage of that and make sure that the needs and the health of our community is always put forward first.
Agreed. I think that a lot of the times with life and things that are happening now that folks are involved in, whether it's work or other activities, it kind of takes away from focusing on what used to be. And I think for me in 2020, that's where I came back home and me and my mom actually started gardening for the first time. And it's not that we never did that before, but it was just kind of natural thing, you know?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to still work with the Pima County Board of Supervisors. You know, I was able to give a land acknowledgement to one of their things, and I'm trying to get started here what I would call one seed, one child, and that would be to give every first or second grader here in Tucson School District a cup of soil, some seed, and some water. And sometimes somebody will say, well, you know, we're doing that. You know, we already have community gardens, but it's not about that. It's about having that child actually plant something, because at Hopi, you know, planting a seed because of such from a dry climate where we don't irrigate, it's really an act of faith. I feel like here in America, sometimes we need to refocus back on our values. We seem to be getting away from that, where corn is looked at as a commodity instead of a life-giving force. So to me, it's really about getting the attention of these younger generation and putting a smile on their face when that seed comes up. You know, I think that's the beauty of it.
And that has to be, you know, an experience in itself, just watching a seed sprout, to know what it is capable of on its own as well.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I'm from the Hopi Reservation, like I said. You know, when we got to this place that we call Hopi Tutskwa, we were giving some seeds and some water in a gourd. But I think one of the most important things that I was told by an elder up there is that we need to have faith in everything we do. And so planting seed to me is like an act of faith. One of the experiences I like to talk about and kind of that reconfirmed that belief is, I remember back in 2018 when we had a drought. You know, we plant our corn deep. We planted anywhere from 6 inches to a foot and a half deep. So I planted that year. And it didn't come up because we're going through a drought, and it stayed in the ground until we got a big blast of monsoon rain at the end of August, and the seeds came busting out of the ground, and I had just enough to fill up a pretty good truckload, and I was able to distribute that to my community after a while. Now, if I didn't have the faith that I learned from my grandfather and other people, then I wouldn't have planted. And so that's what I mean. It's always good to plant something, because when you're planting something, you're not only planting a seed, but you're also planting yourself. And you get to watch yourself grow. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, so amazing. So I had an experience I talked about where me and my mom planted, and then the next year we planted again. But because when it comes to soil types or, you know, overusing your soil, what's that next step if something is not growing and it's just not flourishing like when you first started?
Well, you know, we have here at the University of Arizona, we also have a lot of these master gardener programs, you know, that people can take, and people can learn how to do soil amenities, like the different types of mulches and things like that. It's a little bit beyond my purview, because I'm just used to planting things. I remember, you know, I wasn't until I got to Cornell that I really got to understand the science behind what I do. It was just something that my grandfather told me. You know, people are always talking about that fancy word called traditional ecological knowledge. You know, I always like to break it down and call it, you know, those are the things my grandfather taught me, right? And so it's kind of learning like that. It's kind of removing the fancy words and doing something simple. And I think that's something that I'm trying to emphasize. But, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of great community gardens here. A lot of people that I've met over the years are more than willing to assist people here. And I really like Tucson because it's a very, very good community, and people really seem to care about each other. So what I like to do is also try to collaborate across fields, across politics, you know, across communities, because, you know, when it really comes down to it, you know, we're all human beings, and it's very important that we learn to take care of each other. And that's all. Just kind of leave it at that.
Absolutely. Is all generational ancestral knowledge, you know? And so when did you really start getting more into the importance or fully understanding? Did it start when you were a young person at home?
Yeah, you know, when I was a young person, my grandfather, my dad was in the military, and he dropped me off on the reservation when I was about 10 years old, and I spent my summers out there. And, you know, I remember telling him one time that I was bored. And he picked me up the next day at 5:30, and he shook me around a little bit and said, no, we're gonna go down and hold some weeds, fix some fences. And I'll never say that again. But, you know, it was just that those values that I learned from agriculture. It was, you know, the whole thing of sharing, the whole thing of hard work, being proud of something that you're doing, you know, responsibility. I learned all that stuff. And You know, as I look back on it, like I said, I didn't really care for that when I was about 10 years old. But now that as I got older and as I started to get older, the more I appreciated those things that I was taught as a young person. And so I still try to carry those things through my values in my life today. It's never a moment that I don't miss my grandfather because of the things he taught me. And I guess people are always talking about AI. And stuff like that, but I don't know about AI. I think I appreciate it, but I'm just not too sure about it. So, anyways, I'll just
leave it at
that.
Yeah, I have had some even with in podcasting, it's like they have this AI voice generation where you could record your voice one time and you could reuse your own voice by typing in a sentence if. But that's just kind of like the lazy way of doing things.
Yeah, I don't know. I grew up in a generation where we had Chia Pets, and you just put the water on the clay sheep there and it have sprouts on it. And it's kind of neat like that. But, AI is good for some things. I think that it will reshape a lot of our medical situations here. We'll be able to get a lot of better access and things like that. But, I still think it's also important to teach our young people even how to write, how to do cursive. I don't know how anybody that does that anymore. It's just, how to write a letter. I remember one time I was at the bottom of the Grand Canyon on a 7-day trip, and we didn't have cell phone service down there, so I brought some paper and pencil, and I just wrote letters the whole time I was down there. When I got to the top of the Grand Canyon again, I mailed those off. And how much is that missed? It's just nothing better than receiving a letter. Sometimes I'll even send myself a letter. Just depends.
Just to go to the mailbox.
Exactly. Just to go to the mailbox. Exactly.
Instead of checking an email.
Exactly. Right.
That's and it's the way more it's personal, done. So that's good.
Yep. Exactly.
So I also learned that you have published a few works. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think one of the most recent publications was by my partner, Rebecca Sosi. She's a Regents professor there at the University Law School. We did a publication called The Seed is Law. And so what that was about was really about, a lot of it had to do with intellectual property. How do we protect indigenous seeds? What treaties were available? What rights do we have? Because, a lot of times we don't have control over those, And, for example, Bayer has a short corn variety that's drought resistant, And so my question has always been is, where do they get those genes from? Here at the University of Arizona, what I'm going to try to do after I get permission, of course, from the tribe is to genetically sequence these things to make a fingerprint so that I could match up whatever hybrids are coming out of. And not only here at Hopi, but also throughout all indigenous countries here, tribes here in the United States, to see if we can't make a claim, not to stop research by no means, but to have benefit sharing. Some of this money could be used to, buy tractors for the community, to plow up fields, to maybe buy some equipment for they can store some of their food and produce. But it's really about benefit sharing. I've never tried to stop research because I am a scientist, but I sure would like to see more good things go to the community, especially when they need it, because the funding is very limited out in Indian country, as we know. And so just trying to create those resources, like you said at the beginning of this conversation, is very, very important to me.
And when you talk about genetics, those types of can be long conversations in tribal communities.
Yes, they can.
How do you intend on even explaining that?
Yeah, no, that's kind of hard. You have to start from the basics. All the tribes that I know of have what they call an IRB process, an Institution Review Board process. So each tribe is different, but it's just trying to get them to understand that. I think because these things are sacred, like corn and everything else that comes, it's a very touchy subject on that. And we have to ask ourselves before we even go into that, how are we going to do this? And I'm struggling with that sometimes too. But my thing is just to let the community know what's going on, to go talk to the tribal council like I did at Hopi on a number of times, to make sure that they fully understand what's going on, but never to move without their consent. I just feel like that's what we need to do. We need to really listen to the tribes and their tribal communities.
How do the community members respond to that?
Well, a lot of them are just curious. I think a lot of them are worried about especially cross-pollinization. They're worried about other corn or other pollen coming in there and contaminating their crops. They're nervous about that. They're also kind of upset too, because they know that some of their corn has been exploited. It's been taken away, and people are making all kinds of things of it. It's losing its reverence. They don't respect it like we do. And so they're just trying to find solutions to kind of protect those things, to trying to make sure that, you know, they're well taken care of, and that the recognition is given to the many women, many generations of women that have went through all these thousands of years to actually get it domesticated like that, and go from a little plant called Tia Sente to these beautiful, beautiful crops that we have now throughout the United States.
Thank you so much for sharing that and giving that insight about the work that you do and the community's response to that work as well. Do you work with youth or have any involvement with youth programs?
Yeah, I sure do. You know, we just hosted at one of my agricultural sites here. We had a group from called Ole. But it's something at U of A. And we were able to work with the youth to show them, you know, basic science like soil testing, plant physiology, and also how to plant traditionally in some aspects. And so I'm holding another couple of workshops. I'm going to be working with the Yaqui tribe, and I'm starting to reach out to Tone Odom Community College out there to do soil workshops, because I really want the community and the kids to learn how to do this so they have their own data. They can record their own stuff so they can get involved in it. And there's nothing more powerful than empowering a community, and I feel like that's where it starts at. It really starts at the community level, and be next to kind of help, cultivate the next generation of indigenous scientists. You know, I think that's the best thing.
Absolutely. And I think giving someone some hands-on experience mm-hmm. and kind of simplifying this type of work is definitely pretty impactful too.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, that's one thing. You know, it's one thing to go to school and get a PhD like me. I was very lucky to do that. But, you know, we need to have the next generation coming up, because there's so few of us indigenous scientists out there. You know, we've been scientists all our life, but, you know, formerly we had to get this education, you know, to get those three letters behind our names. But there's scientists out there all the time. It's just encouraging the young people to say, hey, look, I can do this. I remember one time I was out I had a group of Head Start kids come out to visit me at Hopi in my field and things like that. And I was explaining the basics of agronomy, the basics of plant physiology, botany, and things like that. And the little kids were just, eyes got all wide, and they were saying, wow, you know, I'm a scientist, you know. And I told them, I said, what do you guys want to be when you grow up? And one little kid raised his hand up about 4 years old, says, I want to be a hydrologist, you know. And it's kind of kid like that, you know. The kids and the youth are so important in our lives. We always got to remember them, and we got to include them in things. You know, I'm very happy when I go to board meetings of adults and I see youth there actually participating or on the board, because they need to learn too. You know, I think there's this disconnect between the elderly and the youth, and I think that we need to try to find ways to fix that, because I think there's so much each of them can offer. I get pumped up when I'm with a young person because that person gives me the energy I need to say, hey, look, my life's not that bad, you know. You know, I just recently I got put on an intramural basketball team, and I haven't played since I was in high school, and I'm like 58 years old now. So I told my friends, man, I'm gonna show up with my basketball in one arm and oxygen tank in the next.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, that's amazing. I'm so glad that you're pretty much well-rounded in the work that you do, and you're willing to continue to put that out there in the community and be on the ground, really, and showcase your work, but not just in like a professional setting, but in the community, for youth. And so, yeah, thank you for the work that you do and the dedication that you have.
You know, and I always like to say too, you know, these local radio stations like, you know, KXEI here, you know, getting the voice in the community. Up at Hopi, we have KUAI, and they have, you know, I think it's KTNN up on the Navajo Reservation. And I think, you know, these stations are very important as far as what I'm concerned, you know. We're kind of moving away from looking at the newspaper like I remember when I was a kid, and I think these community radio stations like yours should be supported by the community, because they are the community, and I think when you have voices from the community, it makes it even more stronger. So I also want to thank you and your staff here for at least having me on and carrying the message forward.
Yes, absolutely. So is there anything else coming up or that you have to look forward to in your work or personal, whatever that is?
Yeah, I'm starting to put together for next fall. I'm trying to organize this, what I would call an Arizona Tribal Agricultural Conference, focusing on soil health, focusing on crops mainly, and trying to figure out ways that, like I said, so that we can get this food into our communities, whether it be traditional food or different types of produce into our communities raised on the reservations here in Arizona to feed our children. I think that's the main thing that I'm working on right now. And of course, soil health. I'm always looking at soil health because we got to have healthy soils in order to raise healthy food, in order to raise healthy human beings. So you have a trifecta there.
One other thing real quick, I forgot to touch on, just because it was a topic that came on in the last conversation with Dr. Carletta Chief, was talks about climate change. Mm. Are you big on that conversation in the work that you do?
Well, you know, climate change is very important. And I think, you know, it is, I talk about it, but I talk about it from an aspect of cycles. And I think, you know, I realize that, you know, we're in the Anthropocene where we're contributing to climate change like that. And I do believe that's happening at an accelerating rate. But I'm also trying to teach people how to adapt. I think that's one thing that we don't do with climate change. We have all the science backing up, but have yet to see programs. Well, how do we adapt to these changes, you know? How do we deal with droughts? How do we deal with hurricanes? You know, we just kind of, you know, rely upon FEMA to do all these fixing up. When what are we going to do when they're not there? You know, we need to rely upon ourselves, and we need to figure out how to adapt, because we're an ever-changing world. And I think with climate change happening, you know, we need to do what our ancestors do. We just don't need to hide in the ground. We need to go out there and learn and help each other. And I think so adaption is always the key. You know, indigenous people have been adapting since at least 1492. I'll just put that out there. And we're still adapting. And so I'll just leave it at that.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson, for taking the time to be here with me today. Do you have any last words, any shout outs that you want to give?
You know, I like to shout out to the Indigenous Resiliency Center. They're really good, and the Howery Foundation, and a couple of foundations up at Hopi Tootswa Permaculture and the Hopi Foundation itself. But, you know, I always like to leave a conversation. You know, I know that we're all busy in this world, and I always like to say, you know, you've really got to like yourself. You really got to love yourself. And you got to take time in your day to what I call watch the little bug cross the road. You know, slow yourself down just enough to see that. And I think, you know, that's important. So that's what I kind of like to leave. Just remember to always love yourself and always remember to help each other. And that's all. Leave it at that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to be here with us here at KXEI.
Thank you very much.
You are listening to Cultivating Indigenous Voices from KXEI Tucson, hosted and produced by Tina Andrew, featuring Dr. Michael Kotutwa Johnson, a Hopi farmer and a faculty member and assistant specialist within the School of Natural Resources and the Environment at the University of Arizona. To hear other episodes, go to kxei.org.